This episode is brought to you by Thorn, and I have some incredible news for any of you that are in the military, first responder, or medical professions. In an effort to give back, Thorn is now offering you an ongoing 35% off each and every one of your purchases of their incredible nutritional solutions. Now, Thorn is the official supplement of CrossFit, the UFC, the Mayo Clinic, the Human Performance Project, and multiple special operations organizations. I myself have used them for several years, and that is why I brought them on as a sponsor. Some of my favorite products they have are their Multivitamin Elite, their Whey Protein, the Super EPA, and then most recently, Cinequil. As a firefighter, a stuntman, and a martial artist, I've had my share of brain trauma and sleep deprivation, and Cinequil is their latest brain health supplement. Now, to qualify for the 35% off, go to thorn.com, thorne.com. Click on sign in and then create a new account. You will see the opportunity to register as a first responder or member of military. When you click on that, it will take you through verification with GovX. You'll simply choose a profession, provide one piece of documentation, and then you are verified for life. From that point onwards, you will continue to receive 35% off through Thorn. Now, for those of you who don't qualify, there is still the 10% off using the code BTS10, behind the shield 10, for a one-time purchase. Now, to learn more about Thorn, go to episode 323 of the Behind the Shield podcast with Joel Totoro and Wes Barnett. This episode is sponsored by a company I've literally been using for over 15 years now, and that is 5.11. Now, my introduction to their products began when I started wearing 5.11 uniforms years ago for Anaheim Fire Department. And since then, I have acquired a host of their backpacks and luggage, which have literally been around the world with me. The backpack where I keep all my recording equipment is a 5.11 backpack. And then most of my civilian gear, the clothes that I wear, are also 5.11. Now, more recently, they've actually branched out into the brick and mortar stores. So, for example, Gainesville, where I do jiu-jitsu, has a beautiful 5.11 store. So if you are a fire department, a law enforcement agency, you now have access to an entire inventory of clothing and equipment in these 5.11 stores. Now, I've talked about the range of shoes they have and how important minimizing weight in our footwear is when it comes to our back health, knee health, etc. I've talked about their unique uniforms that are fitted for either male or female first responders. And then I want to highlight one new area, their CloudStrike packs. For those of you who enjoy hiking, this would even be an application, I believe, for the wildland community. They've created an ultralight pack now with a hydration system built in for rucking, running, or other long-distance events. Now, as always, 5.11 is offering you, the audience of the Behind the Shield podcast, 15% off every purchase that you make. So if you use the code SHIELD15, that's SHIELD15, at 5.11tactical.com, you will get that 15% off every single time. So if you want to hear more about 5.11 and their origin story, go to episode 338 of Behind the Shield podcast with their CEO, Francisco Morales. Welcome to the Behind the Shield podcast. As always, my name is James Gearing, and this week it is my absolute honor to welcome on the show entrepreneur, Air Force spouse, and the woman behind Spousely, Monica Fullerton. Now, in this conversation, we discuss a host of topics, from her early life, the huge potential for entrepreneurship, not only with military and first responder spouses, but also their partners, the array of gifts and services you can find on Spousely, and so much more. Now, before we get to this incredible conversation, as I say every week, please just take a moment. Go to whichever app you listen to this on, subscribe to the show, leave feedback, and leave a rating. Every single five-star rating truly does elevate this podcast, therefore making it easier for others to find. And this is a free library of well over 900 episodes now. So all I ask in return is that you help share these incredible men and women's stories so I can get them to every single person on planet Earth who needs to hear them. So with that being said, I introduce to you Monica Fullerton. Enjoy.
We'll be right back.
Well, Monica, I want to start by saying thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the Behind the Shield podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me, James. I'm excited to be here.
So where on planet Earth are we finding you this morning?
Oh, man, I am over in Las Vegas. So it's a great place to be. There's a lot more to do in Vegas than just the Strip.
So educate us, because I have never been to Vegas because A, I'm not a huge fan of deserts. I lived in California for a while. And B, gambling does nothing for me. So if people aren't into those, what are the things that are exciting about Vegas that draw the non-gamblers to your city?
Yeah, so we live about 30 minutes from the Strip. So for us, it doesn't even look like we're in Vegas. We have a beautiful mountain view out of our window, and we love going up to the mountains. There's beautiful red rocks. So just, you know, getting outside, really embracing that the desert also has more to offer. We kind of created our own little oasis in our backyard. So we've got, you know, a pool, a putting green. You would never even know you're in Vegas, but there's a lot of great shopping. There's a ton of great restaurants off the Strip. We actually try not to eat really on the Strip ever, just because, you know, it's so busy and it's very touristy, and we like to go to more of the mom and pops and the fun, trendy bars and stuff off of the Strip. So there's a lot more. And honestly, we've got twins. So having kids here, I was completely like, I cannot believe my kids are going to be born in Vegas. But so far, it's been good family-wise as well. There's a lot to do.
Have the kids got tattoos already?
Yes, it says I love my mom.
Now, there's actually a comparison, though, because I live just outside Orlando and worked there for 10 years as a firefighter in that area. Again, I can't stand the resort area. Sometimes I get dragged into them because my family wants to go to the parks. But outside of those, same, there's some beautiful, not only areas of Orlando itself, but also a lot of suburbs of Orlando that are absolutely gorgeous. And you wouldn't think you're anywhere near the rat house.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you kind of get that out of your system when you first move there and everybody starts to visit you and they're like, oh, can we go down and gamble and everything? So I would say the first year was good for that. And then after that, it turned into more like, okay, what can we do not going near the Strip?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I'd love to start at the very beginning of your timeline. So tell me where you were born and tell me a little bit about your family dynamic, what your parents did, how many siblings?
Yeah, so born and raised in a small town in Ohio. It's called Medina, Ohio. My dad is a doctor, and my mom worked in a number of different corporate industries, as well as having her own businesses throughout the way. And it was always just very inspiring and interesting to see. So I didn't grow up with my parents together. So I was kind of torn. I always saw two different worlds. I always saw, you know, my mom was a hardworking single mom, always doing everything that she could. And same with my grandma to give me the best life. And my dad, you know, a doctor working around the clock. He also owned a restaurant, surgery center. So just also very, you know, business driven, but in kind of his own world in a sense. So it really allowed me to kind of see the power of hard work at a really young age. I've always been around other entrepreneurs and just absolutely loved being brought up in a small town and really having that Midwest small town upbringing. But I also, when I got, after graduating from high school, I picked South Florida to go to school for a reason. And that was because I just wanted to see what else was out there in the world. And I had big dreams of becoming the next Oprah. I absolutely loved the power of communication and how she brought people together. So love the small town feel, absolutely loved everything that it really just ingrained in me. But I also, you know, had big dreams and big goals, and I wanted to see what the world had to offer.
When you look back now as a mother at your upbringing, what are your observations between, and I hate that phrase, kind of work-life balance. It's so cliche, but there is a tug of war between actually simply earning enough money to put a roof over your kids', you know, heads and clothe them and feed them, but balancing that with being present. And a lot of the first responders and military members listening, I'm sure, you know, we're acutely aware of that. But I've seen, you know, my son's mother, her mother worked and worked and worked. And so she ultimately was kind of raised by her grandmother. And there's kind of, you know, there's not a strong relationship between her and her mother. And I've seen it even, you know, in a different way with my wife now and her son. And it wasn't so much that she wasn't there, but it was just a case of, you know, when you bend over backwards for your child, where is that point where you start losing the relationship as they're growing up?
Yeah, you know, I always talk about the hustle and the juggle, because at the end of the day, you know, a little backstory for those listening, because I didn't mention it, but basically what happened on my journey was I moved to South Florida with those big dreams and went to school for broadcasting and communications. And I ended up getting back together with my high school sweetheart from the small town. And he was actually commissioning into the Air Force. So that's kind of how everything played out, where, you know, I ended up living this military life and being a part of the ongoing, just, you know, you don't really know what's coming next. But once we added kids into the mix, which is so wild that the twins were born here in Vegas, I started to realize, you know, between what the military demands of his time and what my life looked like working in corporate. And then I started my own business and, you know, raising twins without any family nearby. It was the constant juggle of how am I going to be able to handle it all? And what I will say is you get to a place where you know in your gut when you need to take some steps back and when you need to adjust different things that are on your plate. And it's a constant season of life, just like the seasons that we go through, you know, in the world, basically. So I feel like I have continued to get to a place in the different seasons of life that I've gone through, the different stages, whether it's with the twins or in my career, that you just kind of hit that point of like, okay, I need to come up for air a little bit and I need to see where I'm at, where I want to go. And am I present in the moment? And I actually just readjusted. I really took some time towards the end of last year to kind of really mentally adjust where I was at and how I was balancing everything. And I didn't love where I was at, to be honest. I was just, you know, buried and living and breathing, growing a business and juggling it all in my husband's crazy schedule. And you're essentially parenting on your own, oftentimes just trying to meet the demand of everything. So I feel like you just get to a place where you know in your gut, like, I need to make some changes. And that's what I recently just did over the past few months. And honestly, it's been incredible because I feel more present in where I'm at and where I'm headed.
Our first responders work a lot more than most people realize. And what I've come to kind of talk about, I guess, more than anything else is shifting the mind from money to currency. And really, yeah, ultimately, as a parent, your currency is time with your children, time with your family. That's the ultimate gold standard. And so if hours worked, and these are, you know, forced hours, a standard work week, and then mandatory overtime if they're understaffed, you look at a paycheck, you go, well, I'm providing for my family, but that's not the most important currency anymore, because it's at the detriment of the time with your family. And it's a really hard mix to get people to firstly even identify, because they're so tired, but the biggest thing is to then turn around and fight for, to advocate for that time off. Because, yeah, I mean, if you look at the corporate space, a lot of the big companies are actually cutting their work weeks now. They're realizing that a 32-hour work week is just as productive and their employees have 3 days off. Whereas, you know, some military and first responder organizations, it's the complete opposite. And, you know, sadly, we do see some of the relationship breakdowns in our professions.
Yeah, it's really hard. You know, a number of our neighbors are retired firefighters and law enforcement and military. And when we get together, it's always such an interesting conversation of just kind of hearing what it was like, you know, when they were serving or when they were, you know, in the industry and everything and where it's at now. And there are, you know, I like to think that we're taking steps in the right direction to get more of the family focus piece. But, you know, sadly, at the end of the day, the divorce rate is still high in the military. The military spouse unemployment rate has been at 24% for nearly a decade. And it's because, you know, most spouses are trying to piece the puzzle together while being present for their family, holding down the fort, pursuing their own career. And there's just a lot of moving pieces all the time. But like you said, it really boils down to there's only so much time in a day. It's up to us what we do to break it down and how we prioritize that currency that matters most to us.
Well, going back to your early life then, how much of an impact did the entrepreneurial element of your mother's career impact you as you got older?
Yeah, so it's always been, like I said, kind of that split upbringing. I will say I definitely got the work ethic from my family. Everybody's very hard workers, especially, you know, my dad just kind of explaining where he's at. He's still not retired and, you know, going to work till the day he dies. But what really happened with it is he was never present. And that was something I always will live with, you know. Even when I see him, I try to explain, like, just come to my graduation, or, you know, be there for the little moments. And those were things that he missed out on. And he was there, you know, he lived 5 minutes away from us, so he could be present. But you just kind of, you know, when you're growing up, that's all you really know. So I think for us, it's been super important to make time where we're all together. We just started family game nights on Thursdays. And those are things that, you know, the twins will always remember. And even though our schedules are constantly changing and it doesn't always fit in, you know, the right way, we still need to make time for it to work. So I feel like growing up in an entrepreneur family taught me a lot of things, especially from a work ethic standpoint. But then it also taught me a lot of things that I didn't want to happen with my own children. And that becomes where you put work first. And when work becomes number one and your family becomes number two, that's where you end up trying to really, you know, backtrack and make up for those that lost time. So trying to balance it.
I think I had a very similar experience with my dad, and I had him on the show. I mean, he's a veterinary surgeon, and he was in the house. He was, you know, my parents got divorced when I was 18. So my upbringing, he was there.
Yeah. But,
I mean, I won, for example, national championships in martial arts, and he never saw a single fight. Yeah. And when I look back now with this kind of, you know, different lens that I have and kind of psychoanalyze it, it's very hard for a child to come to terms with why they weren't important enough and more important than their parents' job. You know, so when you have, for example, the adopted child, well, why wasn't I good enough for my real parents? You know, why when the one parent left, why wasn't I good enough for them? And it's a very crushing thing for some kids. But I think conversely, the latchkey kids, you know, the kids that never saw their parents, who they lived with, there's got to be a kind of psychological element to that too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, with my dad wanting to become a doctor, I want to think it's kind of a cultural thing because he's from India. He came, you know, to America to become a doctor, and he's the oldest in his family. And, you know, he had instilled in his brain that he has to take care of everybody. So, you know, anytime you ask him, he's like, it's not work if you love what you do. And I want to be able to help people and everything like that. But it almost kind of plays a toll on you in a way, because you're like, well, what about the ones that are right, you know, your family that you care about most? It's so much more than just a monetary standpoint. It's just being there for the little moments. And I think as parents now, that is something that my husband and I said, you know, that we would really raise the twins to appreciate everything, to be grateful for all of the little moments, be grateful for all the little things that they get and that we get to do as a family, because, you know, oftentimes you just never know what someone else's situation is. And we're working really hard as a unit to come together and to work around our schedules to make sure that they always feel that love through different things. And it's not just through things, it's through, you know, activities together. It's through just hanging out in the backyard together, swimming, whatever it is, because those are the moments that we all remember most. It's not about, oh yeah, you know, my parent just bought me this new pair of shoes, or I've got the best clothes in the class, or whatever. Those are just things. And when you take away things, that's when, you know, the true impact comes for shaping who we want them to be as humans.
Yeah. Well, I think another interesting perspective is to be able to look back and see those things, not create a, you know, a victim mentality, but just see them and acknowledge them. I always say, you know, reasons, not excuses. That was a reason for me feeling a certain way as I grew up. But, you know, there's also a lot of shame cast on broken homes. Well, the problem with society today is, well, there are backstories to all of these homes. The only thing that we have in our control is what we do with our home. Everyone listening, whether you're a single parent, whether, you know, your grandparents raising your grandchildren, because your children are off doing whatever they're doing. That's how we can undo the damage. And I tried, you know, it's hard being on shift as a firefighter, but I tried to be there as much as I could for my son. And even like you said, the little things, just sitting down and playing with Lego or, you know, whatever it was, you know, the Pokemon cards. I never knew how to play that damn game. We just made it up as we went along. But, you know, and then now he's 16 and he talks about, you know, you were there, you were there, you were there. And I think that's the thing, is no matter what our upbringing was like, we have the opportunity to stop that next domino from falling.
Yeah, we've got to be stronger than our excuses. My husband always says that. He's like, I don't want to hear. He teaches the twins that too. Like, don't tell me your excuses. Just tell me what you're going to do to fix it or what you're going to do to make a change. And I always love that about him and the way that, you know, he was raised, because he was raised much different. We grew up in the same town together. We were pretty much middle school sweethearts. And he came from more of a family where he always had to work for everything he wanted, where I was, you know, a bit spoiled. I was an only child and I just kind of went with the flow of everything, where, you know, he was a hard worker from day one. And that was something that I absolutely loved, is because he always kept me grounded as I grew up and obviously was navigating my own journey. And that was something that I see now as parents, is just constantly keeping them grounded, especially with growing up in Vegas, just because I feel like they're missing out on so many childhood things, that like how we grew up, you know, in the Midwest, of just being able to, you know, go outside on our own and play in, at the park and things like that. And that's just not how it is living in Vegas. So I am looking forward to, we are going to be moving to Florida, which will be, you know, a nice opportunity for them to soak in all of those new memories and the beach life and just kind of getting out there a bit more.
I've talked about this a few times, that where I live, they built 4 subdivisions around a big communal area. So there's a lake, there's a football pitch, like a soccer pitch, tennis courts, basketball court, the clubhouse with a pool. And it literally is what everyone romanticizes about. The kids go and they'll play all day, and it's safe because it's well lit, and, you know, massive paths off from the roads. And then, you know, when they're old enough to be able to do this, you know, they come home when the streetlights go on, you know, and it's something that we can put back, but we've just got so far away, and everything now you have to drive from A to B. And I think you would just make such an impact, not only on the upbringing of children, but also on, you know, the obesity epidemic. You know, if you went back to a lot more of those kind of pedestrian focused communities where it was safe for children to be out in the park, play, get rid of all their energy, and then come home.
Yeah, I actually just was reading something interesting the other day that talked about children that are raised more with like nature involved, like out in nature, doing activities and stuff, as they grow up are less likely, like they don't have as many, you know, mental health issues and things like that, just because they were able to kind of see just the beauty in everything that comes from the simple things, where obviously nowadays that's a huge challenge, because, you know, we've got the internet and we've got gaming and all those things where like our children's minds live in like this whole nother like world, essentially. So that's something as parents that we've been really cautious about, you know, with, thank goodness the twins aren't really into gaming and going down that path, like just wanting to constantly do things as a family, because you want to keep them around and you want to create an environment that they want to be in and that they want to grow up in as well.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of playing, when you were in the school age, what were you playing as far as sports?
Oh man. So I was never, I was kind of a hopper. I like to think about, like I've done everything. I've played soccer, softball, dance, all different things, but because I was an only child and because my family was always busy, I felt like I didn't really have like the push and no, you need to get past the point of it's hard and continue to stick with it and, you know, do it to the end kind of thing. So I like to think I was a hopper. I did, you know, all different instruments, did different things, but I never really stuck to one thing. And that was something that I wish that I had a little bit more direction in, of like, no, you should really keep playing soccer, or no, you should really keep doing this, because, you know, if we don't push our kids to keep trying when things get hard, then, you know, they become a hopper like I did, which there's nothing wrong with it. And I honestly think that that's shaped who I am today, which I absolutely am so well-rounded when it comes to like just enjoying a little bit of everything, which is also not a bad quality to have.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I'm the same. Absolutely the same. I mean, martial arts is anything I ever did to a somewhat high level, but I told my son, like, I can do a huge amount of things and I'm not great at any of them. And I'm totally fine with that. I can jump on a wakeboard or a snowboard or, you know, a windsurf, all the things. But am I going to win any competitions? No. So I think there's a point, you know, there's a place for you to just go, you know, all in on one thing. But there's nothing wrong with also just immersing yourself in all the things.
Right. I agree.
So you talked about Oprah. So what was the burning desire as far as that path? And was it journalism? Was it simply being kind of like a chat show host? What was actually the nucleus of your kind of passion at that point?
Yeah. So I would always come home from school and I would watch her talk show at the time. And I just remember watching it at a young age and being so inspired by how one person had the power of bringing so many people together of all different walks of life, all different, you know, different passions and industries and different stories. And everybody just was laughing and or crying or sharing stories. And it was just so inspiring to me that she had the power to do that. And that's why I wanted to go into broadcasting and communications. It wasn't necessarily, you know, for the journalism piece of it. It was more so like, how can I use my voice to help bring people together? Because I am so outgoing and I'm an extrovert and I just have this natural superpower of instantly meeting someone and feeling like we've known each other forever, which I feel like, you know, not everybody kind of has that superpower or wants that superpower. There's a ton of introverts that are like, no, thank you. I am good. I am good on the conversation, but I don't know. I really love the power of communication because I feel like if you can master communications, you can do so much in life, which actually has been the groundwork of everything that I've done, whether it was in my corporate career or starting my own business or, you know, with the kids or my relationship or no matter what it has been, it's been communications as my groundwork.
With that perspective, what are your thoughts when it comes to the information that is being disseminated in the world? I'll give you my perspective. When I look at, for example, Fox CNN, I find it very divisive, very lack of communication, all opinion based. When I look at a lot of the messages that have come out of, for example, DC the last 8 years, very divisive, no real communication, just talking about what the other guy did versus how we, the nation, can come together and improve. What is your lens on the message that is out there, not only just for the young people, for my generation as well?
Yeah, I honestly think it is pretty sad just because it has been so divided and it really is an issue of what's being put out there and how the different networks are really like picking and choosing different topics and how they pull them apart, which is why I think so many individuals who do have a passion for communication or just a passion for understanding things and knowledge are starting to just create their own YouTube channels and they're sharing their own opinions and they're doing different things. But I really think at the end of the day, it boils down to the facts and to the data and to what is actually available for us to have a better understanding of a specific, you know, use case, whether it's something going on in the world or something that's coming about or whatever it might be, the history of it. We need to look at all the facts. We need to pull all the data together and we need to remember that it is okay that everybody has different opinions. But I think what happens is if an influencer or a broadcasting and communications person is pushing their own opinion on everybody that's the right way and that's it, that's where we're wrong and that's where we're failing, you know, in a community standpoint. We need to all be able to come together and say, this is what I believe and this is why, and here are the facts. This is what I believe and here are the facts kind of thing. And then meet in the middle of, okay, what can we do to improve? So I feel like I feel like everything happens for a reason. And I am pretty glad that I never did pursue a career in broadcasting and being on TV and being a host or whatever it might be, because I just think it's an industry now that it's not where I want to be. And I honestly have been able to connect with more people through the power of communication, through entrepreneurship. I've been able to build a community of like-minded individuals to come together, to share our stories, to inspire one another. And that is where I feel like my true superpower has come to play versus feeling like I have to report on something that maybe it's not my opinion or not something I believe in, but because this network wants it to be presented in this light, then I have to talk about it. And then that initially puts me and my reputation at risk because it's not something that I would normally want to be talking about.
Yeah. Well, that's what I found with this. I mean, you asked me 8 years ago if I was going to start a podcast. I'd be like, what's a podcast? Yeah. Actually, I guess I knew by that point, but 10 years ago, I would have said, what's a podcast? But what I've realized now is there's so much job justification and unneeded red tape. Because, I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. Sebastian Junger, phenomenal, phenomenal author. I emailed him this morning. He's got a book coming out in May. And, hey, Sebastian, do you want to come back on the show? Hey, James, I'd love to. I've CC'd my person, and then we've already got a date down. It's that simple. And then I talked to a man who's a true expert in his field, that's written books that have, you know, been so powerful. Tribe, for example, for our military members and our first responders, a man who was embedded in one of the highest up-tempo areas of the Afghan war. So this man understands. So there's no, you know, no... tricks.
There's no middleman. Yeah, it's straight from the source.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the simple questions, you know, hey, you know, what did you see? What did you do? You know, what? And that was it. And then you add, obviously, if you want to get a perspective of a thing, then you listen to other people, maybe slightly opposing views, and then you get a really good understanding. But if everything has been the Fox, you know, narrative or the CNN narrative, you're always going to get this skewed perspective. And again, there's so many people in between. It's like I always say, you have a murder on the street in America and they're interviewing people that walk past an hour later. What do you think? Like, you weren't even there. Why are we asking you?
I know. Absolutely. It's just the lens is just getting narrower and narrower. And at the end of the day, that's just where the real problem is that, you know, the younger generations think that that's like the full picture than when they see something. And I think it's we need to keep doing our due diligence on where we're at, where we were, how we can get to a better place.
Absolutely. Well, on that career path then, how far did you pursue that? And then what did you find yourself in next?
Yeah, so I did my bachelor's degree was in the multimedia journalism and communications. I had such great opportunities in Boca Raton, Florida. I was actually working with Jill Zarin from Real Housewives of New York, doing some of her communications for her brand, like just a lot of connections and ins and everything to really, you know, jumpstart my career into broadcasting. But after my bachelor's, I started doing my master's right away, which was in business. And then that's when I think my mental shift started to kind of change, just because I was seeing with the broadcasting side how much work actually has to go into it for how little pay you get. Like, you have to be, you know, a one-man show, basically. You're putting together the whole story, you're reporting on it, you're going to that location. And once I started realizing kind of like what they make and stuff and seeing what other opportunities were out there, I was like, this seems a little crazy to me. This is a little off, you know? So I never actually got to really fully go into pursuing a broadcasting career. I really leveraged more of the business degree and entrepreneurship. So when I left college after finishing my master's, that's when we got stationed at our first duty station, which was in San Antonio, Texas. And I was so lost. I just remember thinking, like, what job am I going to go apply for? Because there's no way I can apply for a broadcasting career and living the military life, knowing that we could be moving every year or every 2 to 3 years. So that was kind of crossed off my list. And then I ended up just going into, you know, many different interviews, ended up in logistics, which I had no idea what logistics even was. I remember sitting in the interview thinking, please tell me what logistics is, because I have no idea. And ended up staying in that industry for almost a decade. I just got really good at it. I learned so much from it. It was actually really cool because just like communications, logistics is the foundational work for any business, essentially, at the end of the day. And if you understand the operations and the logistics of a business and everything that they do to get from point A to point B, there's so much more that's a stepping stone than I would have gotten in broadcasting. So one thing just continued to lead to another. And that's kind of what led me to creating my company, Spousely, which had no idea how to build a multi-vendor marketplace, but I knew it needed to all stem from my passion of communications and bringing people together.
When you're talking about San Antonio and wondering how you're going to work, it's funny, my in-laws are in San Antonio. I'm literally about to go there in 2 weeks' time. Very, very heavily populated military city. Very proud. But again, also a lot of military spouses looking for work, I'm sure. But it makes me think about the pandemic. And one of the most detrimental things about the way it was handled, it was a real virus, you know, and also it depended on the health of the individual and how they, you know, was the outcome. That was the truth in the middle of that whole thing. However, the way it was handled with the stay in your house and we'll tell you when you can come out was the loss of autonomy was extremely detrimental to a lot of people's mental health. Now, when yeah. you're describing a husband or a wife of a military member who is knows they're going to be here for 12 months, but they really don't know what's coming next, I would assume there was almost a kind of not a loss, but a fractured autonomy where you don't really have the capacity to sow your, you know, put your roots down properly. And so there must be almost like an anxiety of never feeling completely settled.
Yeah, you know, that is 100% true for a lot of military families, especially because of just the ongoing lifestyle of not knowing what's coming next. It can be really, really hard from a mental health standpoint because one, it's like, okay, do I go out and I try to meet some friends and then I meet friends and then I leave. And then it's like, now you got to start all over again every single time. And what job am I going to be able to get that's going to move around with us? So for me, my story is pretty unique in the military space of I was super lucky when I went into that logistics interview. This is something that most military spouses struggle with is, do you tell them you're a military spouse when you're looking for a career? Because if you tell them you're a military spouse, are they going to hire you knowing that you are going to have to move around all of the time? And at the time, remote work really wasn't like a big thing. So for me, I was super lucky. I was very close with the owner of the company and, you know, he was very supportive of the military and the military lifestyle. And he goes, I will never forget what he said to me. He goes, Monica, you are never leaving this company. I'm going to keep you as long as possible. I absolutely love your work ethic and everything that you bring to the table. We will do whatever it takes to keep you on board. And he held true to his word. When we found out we were moving from San Antonio, I became one of their only remote workers. And I continued to prove that remote work was possible. As I continued to move up in my position, I did start traveling quite a bit because this was all prior to COVID. But it really proved and it showed that you can be successful and have a great career and work remote. It just sadly took the pandemic for more companies to open their doors to remote work. So I would say the pandemic definitely was, you know, awful for everything that it brought on, especially from a mental health standpoint, but it also opened a lot of new doors, especially for the military spouse community, because now military spouses are able to land certain careers and work remote and leverage their education and their degree that they might have and not really feel like they have to settle. And that's something that I've been a huge advocate for and continuing to use my story and everything that I've done to show like you can make a six-figure salary and work remote. You can have a leadership role and be a military spouse. And I think oftentimes military spouses, you know, sadly, we put ourselves in a box because it's very hard to piece the puzzle together. And I am all about how can we knock down that box and continue to flourish with what we have.
I couldn't agree more. I was talking to my sister who is an editor. She works with the BBC and, you know, all kinds of basically the kind of, I don't know how you describe it, blue chip or whatever the term is, wildlife documentaries that you watch, you know, with David Attenborough narrating a lot of those she's worked on. So, I mean, she's phenomenal. But before she was kind of juggling with the housing and she was having gonna have a baby. And I remember saying the same thing about remote work and it was like, I don't think they'll do it. And then the pandemic happened and now she does a lot of her editing from home, you know? And so
yeah.
It's incredible for that. And also when you think about just the congestion and the pollution, you know,
absolutely.
How many people would drive an hour and a half, 2 hours, especially in London on trains, to go sit at a desk and do the very same thing you could do from a computer at home. What I'm curious about is I still see the same amount of traffic. Has that kind of remote work survived or is it starting to be dragged back into the office again?
I would say it's mixed. I think it just obviously depends on the industry. I think most tech companies and, you know, different companies that can have all of their employees remote or at least hybrid are doing it and they're sticking to it because I think they also saw how much money as a company they could be saving from just the overhead of having employees coming in. And to be honest, I feel like employees are more efficient because now they're not talking at the coffee machine for, you know, a couple minutes and they're focused on their work and they're getting it done, which is allowing companies to cut their work week because they're going hard for the 3 or 4 days and now they're rewarding them with Friday off or something like that. But I will say, you know, with Vegas, the same amount of traffic is happening still just because of it's an industry based city. So a lot of people are working on the strip and they have to physically be there in the casinos. So I think it probably just depends on the different areas where we're moving to in Florida. I saw that a majority of people outside of, you know, those that are commuting do work remote, which I thought was really interesting because it's a very remote part of Florida. And I was wondering what that would look like. And most people are working remote. So I think it just depends on where you're at, what the industry is, but I would love to see more companies sticking to the remote work option and the hybrid option because, you know, not everybody loves remote work. For me, I'm obsessed with remote work. I have my schedule down. Like I live and breathe in my office, which I need to find a better balance of that too. Speaking of balance earlier on, but it is possible. And I think that it can continue to help those that need remote work to be an option.
Well, you hit on the shorter work week. This is something I talk about a lot with the fire service, especially is there are people that have said, oh, the fire service is like a business. And I vehemently disagree. However, okay, I'll play for a minute. If it's a business, then why are we modeling the Indonesian sweatshop versus Google or Virgin or some of these progressive corporations that have gone, wow, 4 days a week, they're getting the same done. Actually, they're being more innovative and efficient. They're actually getting a little bit more done because they're looking forward to their 3-day weekend. Meanwhile, our firefighters are working 56, 80 hours a week. So you're not a business because if you were a business, you would have failed by now. No one would want to work for you. So even through that lens, the fire service has got to understand that you know it's a false economy working that way, that every progressive business has figured out if you invest in your people, your productivity goes up, not down.
Yes. Absolutely. I am a big believer of that. Everything should be at the center of making sure you understand your people, what they're looking for, and how you can better support them, which is why I still think the military has continued to drop the ball on the family aspect, which is why there are so many high rates of divorce and unemployment and even those going into the military. Some people don't even, the new generations don't even want to do it because they know that compromises either their family life or their pay or whatever it might be in their time. So I think we need to work towards, and I always say this, like when one person serves, the entire family serves too. And that is something that is so important. And there's so much work that still needs to be done. There's a lot of work that is in place and advocating and showing how important that when your people are happy, they perform better. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's enough. I think we need to be doing more. I think we can be doing a lot of things better. And I don't know what it's like on the first responder side, but that's why with Spousely, you know, I opened it up to first responders and their families as well, and not just military, is because we go through very similar struggles and our days look very similar. And every day that, you know, our hero leaves, we don't know if they're coming home. Like it's just the same kind of mentality. And I hope that more corporations and companies and supporters start to realize that it all stems at the people level.
People sometimes comment that, you know, it's just these Gen Zs, that's why we're having problems recruiting, and looking at it as in, oh, they're lazy, they're tired, or whatever, which is obviously every generation has that kind of person, but that's not the majority. But I've had guests on the show, and some of it from the military side have said, our children literally grew up knowing war. And so when we had generations where, you know, if you had a father or a mother that was in the military, there was a high chance that you were going to follow in their path. And now when they've seen with 2024 eyes what that actually means, you know, and all the health and mental health issues that come along with actually being at war, you got a generation of children like, hell no, I don't want to do that.
Right.
I barely ever saw my dad. Yeah. And it's the same in the fire service. So this is the thing, is if we want to retain or encourage people to come work for the military, the first responder professions, we've got to fix the things that are broken, because it's not that these kids are weaker. I mean, of course, we have a growing obesity crisis, which factors into that. But it's more that they have access to all this information now. So they are actually be able to make a very informed decision and go, that looks a bit shit. I don't want to do that. You know, so if we fix it, then it will put it back to where a child is excited to join the military or first responders. If we don't fix it, then ultimately we could not have a military or first responder service anymore.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And it all stems exactly like you said, what they're seeing in their household and what they're growing up around, which is why for me, I never wanted to be a doctor, because I watched my dad, you know, work around the clock and never always prioritize other people first, which there's nothing wrong with that. I'm very grateful that, you know, his heart is in it and that's what he wants to do. But also as a child of a doctor, like, I didn't want to become a doctor because I didn't want my life to look like that. I wanted to have a better balance. So I think, you know, we have to do better. We have to find ways to always find that balance. And I'm a big believer in people power and, you know, what we're able to do when we come together and actually truly understand what we need as just people.
I want to get the spousey, but one thing very quickly. I worked on shift as a firefighter for 14 years, and then through the universe kicking me up the ass, told me to go and start a podcast instead. You know, bizarre set of circumstances. I never anticipated leaving the fire service. But, and then, so now I find myself like you. This is my home office, and this is where I work a lot of the time. When I left the fire service, even though, yes, there may have been things that I brought with me in my mind or the things that we saw, my job was over. Like, I didn't have to really think about it until I was obviously cleaning gear when I got home and then prepping gear for, you know, the following shift. But when you're an entrepreneur, when you've got something like this, especially if you're passionate about it, it's kind of the first thing you think of when you wake up and the last thing when you go to bed. How do you set boundaries in your own home so it doesn't bleed into your home life?
Yeah, I would be lying if I said that I have cracked the code and I have a perfect plan in place, because it's just a constant, you know, battle of shifting gears and making the changes that are needed and pivoting. I sleep with my laptop most nights. I work around the clock. You know, it's just, it's not ideal. But at the end of the day, when your heart and soul is into building something, especially something that is helping so many other people and tackling all of the pain points that we see as a community and really helping other entrepreneurs grow, it's hard. But I told myself with 2024, my goal was going to be to take some steps back, to put some new things in place so that way I could come up for air. I could actually see all of the great work that I have done over the past few years and how it really is making a greater impact. So for me, what that looked like was I basically moved out of the daily operation of my company. I moved my team into more hours. We have a ton of automation in place. So really, I didn't need to be living and breathing it. I just was, because I was so attached and I felt the need that I had to be living and breathing it. And so then I also joined some other founders as a VP of another company, which mentally has allowed me to continue building and growing versus feeling like I was just constantly pouring from an empty cup. So now that I've put, even though I've added, you know, more to my plate, I've also essentially taken things off of my plate, and I'm at a place where I feel more balanced than ever. And it's funny because people are like, wait a second. So you're telling me you're an entrepreneur, you went and added another full-time job onto your plate, and you're a mom and you're a military spouse. And I'm like, yes, because if I look back to how I was able to grow my company to where it's at today. One, I was still working my corporate career when I launched it, and I mentally had another outlet. When I went all in on my company and I was head down, just like treading for water every day of building, growing, knowing that, you know, I don't have a paycheck coming in, you get to a mental place where you're just like, you're exhausting yourself. You're like, you're basically running a car with no gas. And so now that I actually have gas back in my car and I'm able to keep, you know, driving the ship and I've got my windows down, like the breeze is blowing again and it feels good. Like I feel more balanced. I feel alive. I am present with my family. I am, you know, there for them. My husband said over the past few years that I was physically there, but I wasn't mentally there. And he was 100% right because I was letting it consume me. So now that my brain is kind of separated again into different compartments and not just one compartment, like I feel good. I feel like I've got a better balance.
Brilliant. I'm glad I asked that. All right. Well, then moving to Spousely then. Tell me about how the idea came to you and let's kind of expand on what it looks like.
Yeah. So Spousely truly stemmed out of my own pure inspiration and frustration as a military spouse. Like I said, my personal story is very unique to the community, but most military spouses, like I said, are facing an unemployment rate of 24% for nearly a decade. And that's because it's really hard to be able to do what you love while living a life on the go. So military spouses feel like they take the backseat oftentimes when it comes to our own career. But what I did see was how much talent was within our community. How many of these spouses have gone into entrepreneurship and have created companies that can move around with them to really fill that gap. But what I noticed was there was not one central location for people to go and shop and support, you know, military and first responder owned businesses. So Spousely is basically, you know, like Etsy meets Angie's List, but with a focus on shopping for social good and supporting our nation's heroes. So all of our vendors are approved military and first responder families, and anybody can come and shop and support.
So what is the spectrum of product services that are offered on Spousely?
Yeah. So on the product side, you can find a little bit of everything from cookies to custom gifts to woodworking to coffee. And, you know, the list goes on. And then on the service side, you can find everything from realtors, CPAs, lawyers, marketing companies. I mean, you can really find a little bit of everything. So our goal is to create that true one-stop shop for people to help, you know, support those that support us.
And how has traction been so far?
Really good. So I've been bootstrapping since launch. So I've been self-funding everything. So obviously with self-funding comes a slower growth because you're growing organically and through word of mouth. But everything we've done has been through word of mouth. So we have over 600 vendors now, and we're adding more on a weekly basis. And that has all been word of mouth, no front-facing marketing. And then we've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of users. We're nationwide. People are starting to recognize Spousely as the go-to for supporting this community. So we've got a lot of great things going. We've been recognized on the Forbes Next 1000 list. I made the Inc. Female Founder 200 list. Like, we've been on national news and just, you know, doing what we can to spread the word with what we have. And why we've been able to grow so quickly is truly the power of our community.
I think we talked about this on the phone, you know, a few weeks ago, but again, I'm an incurable optimist, a very angry optimist, but incurable nonetheless. but I truly believe that we're at the beginning of a paradigm shift where I think people are sick and tired of chain restaurants and chain stores. And, you know, you think about the 80s, 90s, when shopping malls were at their height, you know, people would basically go in there just to consume, to sift through racks of clothes or, you know, CDs or whatever it was. But there wasn't really a social interaction. There wasn't a bespoke artisan, you know, craftsman element to it. And I'm watching, and I've said this for a few years now, and I'm watching our local mall here in Ocala just disintegrate. All these massive
stores. Oh, they're going. Like, I don't even think malls are a thing anymore.
No, and they could be, but I think the way that you breathe life into them, first you take the damn roof off and let some blooming daylight in again. That's the most depressing thing to me. We're in Florida and it's dark in there. But but then, you know, the breweries and the cafes and the butcher shops and the, you know, barber shops and all these places where people talk to people and they consume things that the owner is actually passionate about. I think that's the future. But now you have this online platform, because there's times where you don't need to just go to a shop. There just isn't. And that's what Amazon is good about. I mean, it's a monster, but it has got that down. So knowing that you can go to an online store that you're supporting, you know, the first responder and military professions, that if they're making it themselves, you also know it's American made. I think that's part of this new kind of movement, this renaissance that I'm hoping is going to sweep through America.
I agree. I really hope so as well. I feel like, you know, just really as Americans, I mean, we're constantly all working. I mean, that's one thing about America, right? Is like, we're just always craving more and we want to keep growing and building and doing all the things that I feel like we should put our hard-earned dollars towards supporting one another. Because when we support one another, especially through our businesses, we're really fueling the economy that we want to build. And the communities are really the backbone of everything that we do. And you mentioned one thing about the breweries, which I think is super interesting, because a lot of breweries now are bringing in vendors like that are small businesses to sell on certain days, because they know that those vendors are going to get some great sales, because now it's around the conversation. It's meeting the business owner. It's having a nice drink together. Like, it's really about all what we've talked about, people supporting people. And I hope that as we do continue to grow and build, and I know we're up against, you know, the monsters of marketplaces out there, but what you will find when you do come to Spousely is just this instant love and passion for community. And our vendors are supporting vendors, our customers are spreading the word, corporate companies are coming to us for corporate gifting and big bulk orders, which is nice and awesome because they're putting their money where their mouth is. And, you know, just finding ways to, I get it. And not everybody's gonna be able to find everything they need from supporting a small business. But my biggest thing is, even if you set aside $20, $50, $100 a month, whatever your budget might look like, to go towards supporting a small business, there's so much impact that that can have alone.
Well, I love that term, vote with your dollar. I mean, that's why, yeah, for example, you go into Publix here in Florida and there's not, yes, even a health food section anymore. It's so popular now it's through the store. So you want healthy biscuits, go to the biscuits aisle. You want healthy, you know, whatever. And so you've got, you know, the organic and the, you know, grass fed and all those are right next to everything else. So that is supply and demand. So we can, you know, push the needle. And I think one of the things that really struck me, Jocko Willink was on Joe Rogan a few years ago, uh-huh, and they were talking about making Origin jeans. And mm-hmm, they found like one of the only men left who even knew how to work the loom that they needed to use to make the denim to make the jeans. Uh-huh. And so this is another part of the conversation, is there's all of these trades and these skills that if we skip one more generation are going to be completely lost. And we're not going to, yeah, you know, so I think that this kind of resurgence is so important, even just for our own economy itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think really mentally getting past the fact that, yes, you are going to be paying a bit more when you shop small. And I think that's part of the problem is, you know, the Amazons and companies like that have got the consumer so trained that we're always looking for the best deal and something cheap, and we don't want to pay for shipping and blah, 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 that I think really shifting the focus towards, even if it's just gift giving, that people shop small, that can still support an entire small owned business community, right? Like if people, there's birthdays all the time, there's gifts, there's corporate gifts, like even if it's just the gifting around paying more for a quality product that you know you're going to be supporting, you know, another family, like do it to make that change in your shopping.
One more area before we kind of go to some closing questions. In the fire service specifically, I love it when I see entrepreneurship. And the reason why is, firstly, on the days off, you've got something completely different to focus on. You're not going to be awake all night like you would be in the station. So you're still going to get a good night's sleep. But I think it's also very healthy, because if you get hurt, if you get fired, if you just decide to retire early or retire when you hit retirement, that transition is so important to go from one sense of purpose to another. And if you've created, yeah, a business on the side, to me, that's a beautiful way to make a healthy transition. What is your perspective on entrepreneurship and the transition from the military?
Absolutely. We actually have a number of vendors that have started their businesses while they are still in service. And the reason that they've done that is for that exact reason. They want that transition to be much easier. They want to feel like they have a sense of purpose and that once they leave, that they're not just completely lost. And sadly, that's sometimes, you know, what happens, which is why there's so many organizations and different job boards and things like that, trying to help really focus on that transition piece. So I think entrepreneurship is such a great route. And actually, I recently have been learning from our vendors that are active duty, that there is different things in place now with each branch, that it's not like they're closing off doors to anybody that does want to be an entrepreneur. They're just asking that, you know, they report that they do have a business, so that way there's no conflict of interest or things like that. But at least it's being encouraged and talked about more, because I think at the end of the day, it's a creative outlet. And that's what I always stress, is that you can be really great at your job and you can serve and you can go through all of this, you know, protection and things that you do for our country, but everybody needs a creative outlet no matter what. And from a mental standpoint, I think entrepreneurship is such a great way for those to pursue something they love and to get that joy from giving it to somebody else too.
I think I've heard this from the military and definitely seen it in my, you know, men and women in the fire service too. A lot of people come away from those professions and they're like, well, you know, I was an artillery man. So all I have is, you know, firing guns and throwing grenades. That's all I'm good at. Or I was a firefighter. So all I really know is how to advance a hose or throw a ladder. And it's complete rubbish. The team, you know, the teamwork, the working under pressure, the problem solving, all the other skills, we, you know, we're a very unique kind of human being, and that can be applied in so many ways. And to me, a healthy transition, if you weave in some sort of service. So I love the social business model. For every 10 pairs of shoes I sell, another, you know, one pair of shoes goes to person X. So I think this is another thing about, you know, the entrepreneur space is it's empowering us and exciting the service members or the first responder professions to challenge themselves and take some of those skills that they've done in uniform and take a leap of faith and try it in a completely different venture.
I agree 100%. I feel like, you know, military families have some of, and that's just obviously the side that I know in and out, is we've got the grit, we've got the strength, and we're always problem solving. And those are some of the key components of, if you can master that, then you've got a very nice foundation for entrepreneurship, just because oftentimes those are some of the hardest things to overcome, and we overcome them every single day, and we know what that's like. Same with the first responder community too. So I agree. I wish that more people would kind of dig deeper. Like you said, it's beyond just, oh, I only know how to do this, or I've been in logistics, because trust me, if I stayed in that same mindset, even with my career of logistics, like I would have never gotten to where I'm at today. But I applied all of the core foundational business skills that I learned into a completely different market that, one, I knew nothing about, but I knew what impact it was going to have, and I was up for the challenge.
Absolutely. Well, for people listening then, how can they shop on Spousely, and how can they become a vendor on Spousely?
Yeah, so it's super easy to shop on Spousely. Just go to Spousely.com. You can type it in with the dash or without the dash. Google Spousely. It'll show up for you. And really encourage everyone to help us continue to spread the word, whether you are military or first responder connected, or you're just a supporter. Everybody is welcome. And we would love every opportunity we get to shout about our community from the rooftops. And then if you're interested in becoming a vendor, it's super easy. Like I said, we have both product vendors and service vendors. You just go onto our website, click Become a Vendor button. You'll go through some questions, and then you'll go through a verification process with our partner GovX. And once you're approved, we're with you every step of the way to get the shop set up. And you really, the greatest win is not to join a marketplace to think that you're going to make, you know, thousands and millions of dollars. It's really not about that. It's about the community that you're going to get by your side that's going to support you on the journey.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I would love to go to some closing questions before I let you go, if that's okay.
Sure.
The first one I'd love to ask, is there a book or are there books that you love to recommend? It can be related to our discussion today or completely unrelated.
So there's one book that I absolutely loved, and it's because she's just a powerhouse entrepreneur herself, and it's called Jump by Kim Perrell. And it's really all about taking that jump into starting something, because oftentimes that's our you know, biggest wall blocker, I like to call it, is that, you know, we're not willing to take the jump into what we need to get to where we want to go. So I'm much more of a just kind of like podcast listener, reader of articles and things that I come across, not so much on the book side, which is why I really loved her book.
Brilliant. What about films or documentaries?
Ooh, let's see. There's a number of them. I absolutely love, I thought The Intern was really a fun business type movie. I loved watching the documentary recently about Uber. I thought that was very interesting. I forget what it was called. Super something. I forget. Let's see. What else have I watched that was inspiring? I don't know, man. There's lots of things. Oh, I thought, you know, this is kind of funny. This people probably will be laughing listening to this, but Parent Trap has always been an inspirational movie to me, only because I really thought it really is like our life, my life personally, just of how, you know, the husband went off and had created this winery dream of his, and then the wife went off and built this fashion business, and they were living completely separate lives, and then they end up coming back together, and obviously they have twins. But I think there's so many business nuggets in that, of the balance of family, pursuing your career and your goals, and finding ways to make it work, because they were completely across, you know, they were living one in the United States and then one overseas. So I think it just speaks volumes from a fun movie standpoint.
Brilliant. All right. Well, then the next question, is there a person that you'd recommend to come on this podcast as a guest to speak to the first responders, military and associated professions of the world?
Yes, I will say, I think you've got to definitely have my friend Haley, the founder of Torch Warriors, on your podcast. She just recently also aired on Shark Tank. She's a vendor on Spousely. She's a veteran. She's all about inspiration, building a brand from the ground up, but also really focused on, you know, female warriors and everything that, you know, women go through on the journey. I think she'd be a huge inspiration.
Brilliant. Let's make it happen then. Thank you.
Okay, cool.
All right. But then the last question before we make sure everyone knows where to find you, what do you do to decompress?
What do I do to decompress? Oh, wow. That's a great question. For me, I do a little bit of shopping therapy. I have Sundays dedicated to myself where I literally will just like walk around a store and just like look at things. It's not even that I need to buy a bunch of things. So really just like mentally, one, removing myself from my house, from my office, because I'm here every day, and just getting out there. I always like to like buy myself lunch. So just kind of like a day to myself. I think self-care is very important, and that's something that I personally push off a little too much. So Sundays have always kind of been my Monica day.
Do you do that on your own?
Oh yeah. Nobody can come with me. And my husband knows, don't call me and don't ask me anything. And if one of the twins asks to come, they're not allowed to come, just because it's just one of those days. I don't even need to pamper myself. It's something so simple of just being in my car, listening to music, calling a family member, going from store to store. And it's not about the money piece of what I'm spending or what I'm going to find. It's more about like, I'm just flying by the seat of my pants.
I like to do that once in a while. Not the shopping so much, but you know, go get food or a coffee or whatever on my own. And I saw a meme on the internet once, and they said that when you take yourself out for a date, it's called master dating. I thought that was perfect.
I love that. That's hilarious. I know, it's funny because I never used to like ever think I would go sit at a restaurant even by myself. But when I started traveling for work all the time, obviously you find yourself on the go by yourself in the airport and at restaurants. And it was honestly the most eye-opening experience for me, because I was like, this is so nice. It's like literally a date with yourself.
Now, when I had a guy on the show who wrote the book, The Introvert's Edge, and it was really, really interesting, because I don't think this is his definition originally. I think it comes from someone in the psychology in the past. But the definition of an introvert is that you can be around people, but you draw power from time on your own, or time, you know, intimate time with your partner or your family. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, that explains it. Because, you know, I don't mind being around people, but there's a certain time where I just disappear in a party and I'm gone, you know? So I was like, oh, I'm actually an introvert then. With that definition, do you draw power from groups, or do you think you're a closet introvert like me?
Well, I would normally always say I am like hardcore extremist of an extrovert. Like, yes, I usually draw so much power from groups, but I will say over the past few years of being an entrepreneur, I have found myself to lean more towards an introvert at times. And I think it's because you are putting yourself out there so much more than you normally would, because you're trying to spread the word, you're networking, you're meeting new people and opportunities, that it actually has allowed me to tap into my inner introvert more, which is very shocking. And I am a Cancer, born in July, and it always talks about introverts. And I'm like, am I really a Cancer? Because I'm an extrovert. Like, I don't really check any of those boxes. But I think at heart, I am a homebody, because I love the feeling of being in my home with my family.
What was really interesting when he described that is there's so many of us that, you know, think that we are extrovert, or that we're supposed to be extrovert, that ultimately are introvert. And so then you think about the social anxiety of being in a bar or a club. A lot of us pregame, I know I did, I would have a couple of drinks to go out to have a couple of drinks. And then you look back and go, oh, now it makes sense, because actually I'm not a huge fan of being in the middle of, you know. And then you look at, oh, Steve, he's the life of the party. And then Steve 10 years later is a raging alcoholic. Well, because again, he did the same thing.
A liquid courage didn't work too much. Exactly. That's so funny, because I am always the life of the party, and I always do love, you know, having, you know, a drink to unwind, or just social drink or whatever, but I only have two max. So even when like I'm like, oh yeah, let's go out with my friends and let's go get some drinks, it's so funny because they think like, okay, like, are we like drinking, like having a good time? I'm like, two drinks is good. I'm having a great time. Have a great day.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah, too funny.
But I think that's it. So you, as you said, you lean more towards the true extrovert. But I think a lot of us, you know, if once we understand our social makeup, then you kind of give yourself permission to be anxious. It's not like I'm scared of being it, but it's just that, you know, this, it is abnormal to be, you know, in a modern society bar setting, for example, when you think about tribal humans only a few thousand years ago. So that's, I think, where some of this self-medication comes in. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just you haven't identified the kind of personality that you actually are.
Yeah, I think we just continue to learn more about ourselves as we go on our way, on our journey. And like I talked about early on, there's just all the different seasons of life, and we go through them. And every new decade brings on, you know, new adjustments, as well as prioritizing what matters most.
Absolutely. Well, very last question then. So if people want to reach out to you specifically, where are you online or on social media?
Yeah, I'm pretty big on LinkedIn. That's the social platform I think I check the most from a personal and professional standpoint. So connect with me on LinkedIn, Monica Fullerton, and I'm on Instagram and Facebook as well. But LinkedIn is my jam. I love kind of working in the business piece as well as the personal piece there.
Brilliant. Well, I want to say thank you so much. It's been an unusual conversation in the best of ways, because, you know, a lot of people are coming on here talking about their time in war, or, you know, their scientific background in mental health or whatever it is. But this is a really important, you know, conversation to have, is that what certainly the spouses of first responders and military, how can they actually forge a career that they're passionate about alongside their loved one in uniform? And then, as we touched on before, the transition piece as well. So I want to thank you so much for being so generous with your time and coming on the Behind the Shield podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me.